Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Sorry, had to suppress a last-second yawn there. The microphone has decided to do bizarre things this evening, but we'll be okay. We'll be okay. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, as I am doing, well, have done, right even now. All switches have been thrown. Yes. If you, too, would like to jump in the chat room as I have, I encourage you to go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click on chat room and pick out a screen name and a password and get right into the thick of things where, well, you'll immediately run into Anatole and Jug of Punch and Seti at Bing and Stockton Larry, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, also the moderator for, lo, yea, verily, these many years of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. The yawn I had to suppress there a moment ago, well, that was occasioned by the fact that I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning, and I'm a little noddy. That's N-O-D-D-Y, not N-A-U-G-H-T-Y. If I had more energy, I might be N-A-U-G-H-T-Y, but we'll take that as red for the time being, if that's all right. Good. Also, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the Contribute tab. That's where you go to help us keep this little broadcast operation on the air. Hallelujah. Glory. Because George Soros' money is busy doing other things. I know. So, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. There, that's taken care of now. And everything's connected and doing what it ought to be doing. Okay. Go away. Go away. All good. Let's see. It is Friday on the front porch. And, by the way, if you would like to participate in Horn fundraising via the United States Postal Service, well, you can always send checks and money orders to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801. And, of course, that's where Boss Man Wayne goes and puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches into the echo chamber and occasionally pulls out an envelope. And it always makes him very, very happy when that happens. So there's that. Now, let's see. Let's get this part out of the way, too. We closed the evening last night. We closed the evening last night with... let's put it this way. We got about $125 and change to go from last night. And I should mention, and thank you very kindly, just a little bit ago, I received a note from Harold Subject line, Roundup Fund, RUF, Liberty Speaks, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. And what a name that is. Proudly presents to the Head On Radio Network a draft for $101.39 to be used to round up to the nearest dollar any contributions received by the horn. Happy math to you. That would be Harold CFO Soctrus. Soctrus. S-O-C-H-T-R-U-S, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Yes. Thank you, Harold. Thank you very kindly. And I will be mathematizing throughout the course of the evening as we attempt to raise the usual $200 per evening that we raise every evening, and that'll put us through the first week of February to the good, which is, well, good. With any luck at all. Here in about 55 minutes or thereabouts, depending on how the filibobster goes, we will be moving over to the... Yeah, a little dose of your own medicine, Carol Baker. Carol said, in regard to the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, Carol says, that's cheating. That's right, that's right. Thanks to the Secret Open Carry Roundup Society, I've got a wellspring here that will turn every odd bit of change into a round number. Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha. 7-Up. Yeah. Unpaid product placement. Yes. Yeah, I know. Sorry, Steve. Steve says the stream is kind of low on the volume. Well, that's because the microphone has decided to be weird. Maybe over the course of the weekend I might succeed in rewiring the whole damn thing. Why not? You know, indolent life of indolent boredom and all of that. Carol, meanwhile, says, keep sending those odd change donations in, boys and girls. Keep it coming in. All right. Let's deal with this stuff. I had a... apparently it went fairly well. I had a nuclear stress test today, so don't be waving any Geiger counters in my direction for the time being. But it occasioned me being up at around 4, and those things take a while, because you have to, first they take you back there and they take the boring pictures of your ticker with some radioactive dye and you and NPO and got the low blood sugar shakes and all of that stuff, you know, as opposed to the I haven't had any booze in a while shakes, which don't happen, mercifully enough. And then you sit around, and then they take you up, and you walk on the treadmill until you hate everybody in the room, and then you go back down, and you sit around for a while, and you get some more radioactive dye, and sit, and sit, and sit, and sit, and sit, and sit, and then eventually they put you back in the tube, and take some more pictures, I am tickled pink to be able, I would not be able to get this, and just, I mention all of this, not as some sort of desperate plea for sympathy, no, but rather to point out the fact that I could not be having this were it not for the fact that I reside in a state that as of this moment, still has the Medicaid expansion in it, okay? And so I am deeply grateful for that single-payer system that exists. And it caused me, and this is not a joke. I mean, I'm very serious about this. I think about the people. I think about how different it could be. If I were in Alabama or Georgia or Mississippi Stan, Oklahoma Stan, Texas Stan, any number of the Stan states, Missouri Stan, that wouldn't have happened today. And as I was sitting there, I was thinking about the people who probably need something like what I had today, who aren't getting it. Because we're still having a conversation about whether or not that we should actually work on ways to make it possible for them to have it. Because, of course, John Roberts, the most evil, diabolical, and probably most intelligent member of the Republican Party in its entirety, took one look at the Affordable Care Act a couple of summers ago. Four summers ago. And decided, all right, yeah, we'll let that for-profit bit go through. We'll call that a function of the Congress's power to tax. But that single-payer Medicaid thing that every state is compelled to participate in, we're going to chuck that little bastard because that's dangerous. Thereby, redefining the political boundaries of the United States, often within the framework of the boundaries of the United States and the Confederacy. And I have been bothered from then to the present by the fact that we have created a Plessyized, well, not we, John Roberts created a Plessyized healthcare system. You know, separate, but equal. Where the people on the downslope of all that equality have to get by with no healthcare whatsoever. And so I kind of reject Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton's argument as propounded during the latest Democratic pageant last night over on MSNBC, which I watched. I know. But I did. And I tweeted about it all throughout the course of the evening. But I have this problem with saying, no, we can't do anything with the Affordable Care Act because it's too hard. We can't even talk about it. I understand. I do sincerely understand where the Congress is. I understand how little either President Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton or a President Bernie Sanders, I understand how little they're going to get done with the House as it is currently comprised. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do. But we can't just say, what the hell? You know, we've at least got this much. Isn't that enough? Because tonight, perhaps right now, there's a woman who works a low-wage job and has busted her ass all of her life, who lives in Mississippi, Stan, who isn't quite sure if those pains in her chest are her heart or her indigestion. And because she exists within the boundaries of the tender mercies of the Republican Party in that state, she sort of has to wait until she either has a heart attack or pukes. Or maybe it just goes away. But the one thing that is not going to happen is that she gets to go to a doctor and find out definitively what the hell it is. And then take the appropriate measures to deal with it. I think it is worth continuing to talk about the desperate need in this country for some sort of universal single-payer system, a public option maybe, or what I've suggested, eliminating Medicaid altogether and rolling Medicaid into Medicare. It's not like it's a mission to Mars. We can figure out how to do that. But it's not going to happen tomorrow or the day after tomorrow or the day after the November election or the day after the inauguration in January 2017. It is not going to happen. This, however, is not the same as what Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton said when she said never, ever. Now, last night she seemed to have found out that that doesn't poll well with the focus groups, never, ever, and has instead, she said somewhere along the way, she'll try to get us to universal single payer. Well, I give credit where credit's due. That's a big-ass improvement over never, ever. But I'm sticking with Bernie. Because Bernie, it seems, understands and thinks, just like I do, about the woman in Mississippi Stan, or Missouri Stan, or Oklahoma Stan, or the guy in Tennessee Stan, or South Carolina Stan, and understands that it's not enough to say, well, you know, we'll get to you when we can. This is the kind of thing that really does demand a sense of urgency. And the only person who's going to get to that is the person who says this is going to be front burner stuff. That the lives of the people in the Stand states really does matter. Now, you know, miracles can happen. John Bel Edwards in Louisiana says he's going to have 300,000 people covered under the Medicaid expansion by July and that he's willing to hair-lip hell itself. And the Louisiana teabagger legislature to make that happen. Every state has its own individual schemes, so in some states, a governor can just do it. Other states apparently require the consent of a bunch of privileged, mostly white people who really don't want the working class, be they white, black, or in anything in between or on either side of that spectrum, to have health care, because then they'll think that, you know, they've got a right to it. So we've got that. And we can discuss that if you wish. Oh, okay, let's see here. I'm going to need two entirely separate sheets of paper this evening. All right, thank you, Roger in Minnesota. You just got rounded up, courtesy of Harold, to $4, which means 97 cents, which means Harold's fund just got knocked off by four. Okay. Done. Thank you, Roger, and thank you, Harold. Thank you, Roger, for the four. Four. See, yeah. Now, as far as the so-called debate itself is concerned, I'm going to let most of it go. You watched it, probably. I watched it. I know that much. And we have largely formed our own conclusions. The only thing that I would like to discuss, at least from my perspective, is something that happened fairly late in the game. Yeah, Carol says, numbers, we need numbers. You don't get out of the cipher. And yeah, I just figured that part out. I thought I'd really, but daggum, no, we just doubled the ciphering. But it, you know, it's conceivable we could make the secret open carry. I got to remember that. I got to memorize that. The secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. We could actually drain that away over the course of the evening, and that would be fine both by Harold and by me, because like I said, we've got like $325 to knock off this evening. There was something that happened fairly late in the game in the debate that kind of stood me on my head. It was one of those moments where I was glad there was not a bottle of rot gut tequila around, and kind of glad that the swirly straw is off for repairs. And that was when, and it was casual. It was just a throwaway. That was when Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton said words to the effect that Henry Kissinger thought she was an awesome Secretary of State. And I found out later that, in fact, there within the whole email folderol, there have been emails released referencing a handwritten note from old Homicide Hank, telling her what a Jim Crack, Jim Dandy, gosh golly gee whiz, darn good job she did. And of course, receiving that kind of an accolade from Henry Kissinger is sort of like being praised by Satan. Yeah. Because in point of fact, Henry Kissinger may very well be Satan. Yes. And I've been kind of gobsmacked with it all day long, trying to sort out why in the sweet name of anyone speaking to people that one hopes will vote for one would glowingly refer to Satan as a good thing. I mean, I'm licked. I'm stumped. I'm beat. I got nothing. And I'm not willing to believe that that somebody like Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, it just, you know, happens to not know the history of old Homicide Hank. You know, sorry. That's just not, that's not credible. But there it was. She said what she said of a man who, and just to share a little bit with you, once upon a time, Henry Kissinger said the following.
The illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes a little longer.
Huh? What, Edith, huh?
No, really. The illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer.
Ha, 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 ha. I make a funny.
Tom notes, you sound great listening on the way to Detroit. Can't wait to have you on this Sunday, and I'll be on this Sunday with Tom. Sunday's at 6. You're so right about Obamacare. I take it personally. I'm lucky to have it being mostly broke. And that's who the Medicaid expansion is for. People who work but just don't make enough money to support the luxurious ambitions of the CEOs of the various health insurance companies. But back to Kissinger.
The illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes a little longer. Animals can be bred and slaughtered?
No, I'm sorry. That was Dr. Strangelove, not Kissinger. But, I mean, there are all kinds of fun stuff, fun things. For instance, and this is a story that goes back to December 2012. Henry Kissinger had a little tete-a-tete, a little beer and skittles, tea and crumpets, whatever, with a group of disaffected Nazis. Now, I don't use the word Nazis as in, you know, those goddamn Republicans are a bunch of Nazis. No. I mean the real article, the genuine creatures. It was back in the 1970s when a group of old Nazis banded together in the hopes of creating a coup, or in the native tongue, putsch, that would get rid of the, at the time, West German Chancellor Willy Brandt. And that was a discussion, the overthrow of Willy Brandt was a discussion that Kissinger actually started. Yeah. He was the contact guy in the United States government for this bunch of filthy old, obviously unreconstructed Nazis. It became what was referred to as the Little Service, and was a product of a little marriage of convenience between the Christian Democratic Union and the Christian Social Union of Bavaria. In one meeting, Kissinger was saying,
"It might be possible to overthrow the current government, but it remains to be seen whether this would involve risks which could put a Christian Democratic Union, Christian Social Union government in great difficulty."
And there's, you know, there's other stuff. Back when Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia were involved in their program of genocide, well, at that point in time, Kissinger said, and this would be about 1975,
"You should tell the Cambodians that we will be friends with them. We are prepared to improve relations with them. They are murderous thugs, but we won't let that stand in the way."
Mm-hmm. This is real. This is historically verifiable. This isn't some sort of liberal progressive screed. This is the evil in which Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon, Harry Truman gave him the pinhead part, participated, and for whom Henry Kissinger was the knife guy. I mean, there was the secret illegal bombing of Cambodia and Laos. The blood of something on the order of a million people is on Henry Kissinger's hands. If some of the stuff that we see in Hollywood horror movies was real, there wouldn't be a mirror allowed anywhere within 100 miles of Henry Kissinger. Because every time he looked in it, he would just see rivers of blood running all over his face and blood dripping off his hands and leaking through the joint between sole and shoe top. Henry Kissinger is a goddamned monster. Henry Kissinger were it not for the fact that he lives behind the veil of protection that being a bloodthirsty, warmongering murderer in behalf of the United States confers upon one, were it not for that, the man would have been serving out a life sentence in a prison somewhere on this planet eons ago. And that's the guy that makes Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton all gushy with pride to mention his praise. Can you unpack that? Can you sort that out? Because I'm having a hard time doing it without reaching some really unpleasant conclusions about the way that Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton views the world. Sorry, Dustin pointing out that my Henry Kissinger sounds a whole hell of a lot like my Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, you know what? He also sounds a whole hell of a lot like my old Pope Bernard Ratzinger. It's generic. But is that something? Was that some sort of a wink and a nod to the last bastion of moderate Republicans? But wait, a moderate Republican would not be enamored of Henry Kissinger, would she or he? Who the hell is within that voter group that Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton was obviously dog whistling to when she brought up Henry Kissinger? I mean, I cannot begin. I'm trying, but I can't fathom. Where that comes from. Carol says she's attempting to appeal to the Reich. Eileen Warnos thinks you're hot. Jeffrey Dahmer thinks you're yummy. No, wait. I will always treasure the lovely note that I received from Mr. Dahmer. Okay. But I'm stumped. I really am. I mean, there was the stuff that, let's see. Well, I guess if you hang around with Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon long enough, that'll probably have some negative impacts on one's own psyche. I mean, just the long nights standing around with Dick as he, you know, as the pills kicked in and the scotch ground him down. Henry, they just don't understand me. They don't understand me, Henry. We could make this country great again if it weren't for the Jews, Henry, the Jews. Oh, sorry, Henry, I mean, I don't mean you. Yes, Mr. President. Maybe it's not so much that my Henry sounds like Arnold. Maybe it's that, no, because Arnold is Arnold, like that. That's not Hank. Okay, I confess. It scares the hell out of me, having somebody want to be the president who thinks that Henry Kissinger's a great guy and an elder statesman and a font of fucking wisdom. It was 1970 when Salvador Allende was fairly and democratically elected the president of Chile. And Henry and Dick declared that their purpose was to, and this is a quote, make the Chilean economy scream. Here's another quote. The issues are much too important for the Chilean voters to be left to decide for themselves. Really? The devil, you say? Yes, I do. Not a big fan of that whole democracy thing, huh? Oh, you thought you were going to stump me, didn't you, Marty? Marty says, and the day of the coup in Chile was, yes, September 11th, 1973. That was the 9/11 that we perpetrated on another country. That was when the CIA, making Chile scream, overturned the government there. And forcibly placed Augusto Pinochet. Pinochet in power. And a nightmare of murder and hell ensued. Carol pointing out, by the way, I'm certain the first woman Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, really appreciated having Hillary's heel in her back last night. Down in Australia, Jennifer says, Carol makes a great point. At this point, they're both going after the repug anyone but Trump peel-off votes. But Kissinger? Jennifer says, wow! I couldn't seem to get interested in the debate, decided to wait and listen to your take because I kind of already saw it behind my eyelids and truly knew that when it came to foreign policy, she would, in an attempt to make Bernie look naive, spit like machine gun fire lists of unpronounceable names linking herself to every world leader as if she still dines with each and every one of them on a regular basis, while he would be forced to repeat the stats, her Iraq vote, and attempt to address the perils of interventionism to a tough crowd, which is tricky in the U.S. Cringe. How bad was it? Bernie brought up her ties to Wall Street and the 600 plus odd thousand dollars that she took to give what were apparently predetermined to be secret speeches to various and sundry, at least three outfits. And he brought up her ties to, and she said, she accused him of using an artful smear that talking about the fact that Every time she sneezes, Goldman Sachs is there with $100 bill for her to blow her nose into. That's an artful smear. No, Doc, what I just did, that was an artful smear. Blowing your nose in $100 bills, that's an artful smear. But Bernie sat there feeling the I don't want to say faux, but the contrived furious, the winds of contrived fury billowing from her. And he didn't back down. He didn't blink. She shrieked at him. And he still, no. And he's not going to leave the issue alone. And he's going to make her own it. And that's okay. And she tried to, now you want to talk about dirty. She tried to invoke the shade of Paul Wellstone as being somehow on her side, claiming that that Bernie was unfairly gatekeeping who is and is not a progressive.
He wouldn't be progressive, Paul Wellstone, because he voted in favor of DOMA.
And Jesus, the answer to that is so easy. Well, you know, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, one, Paul's dead. Paul's a friend of mine. And three, Paul's not running for president. You are. The choice is between me and you on the Democratic side. Not me, you, and Paul Wellstone.
Joe Biden wouldn't be a progressive in your book because, you know, he supports fracking.
Or was it the TPP? I forget what. And the desperate claim that she had... I've never changed my position based on a political donation. And... what person living in a bell jar was fooled by that? Of course she hasn't. The money was given because of the position she had already taken. Jennifer says, oh, no, she didn't. I don't like her. Oh, no, she didn't. Sacred ground. I don't like her. Wow, Kissinger and stomping on Paul Wellstone's grave? Now I don't like her, Bob. Sorry, shaking. Oh, I know. It's creepy. And he, you know, here's another one of those dichotomies. She once again, inartfully, tried to smear Bernie over the over guns, not over the NRA, because see, she can't point to the millions of dollars that Bernie's taken from the gun lobby, because he hasn't. If he had, she would have belled the goat with a big sign that says NRA shill by now, and had it hanging janglingly around Bernie's neck. But it was the Kissinger thing that just knocked me off my... Oh, that and the death penalty. Do you still support the death penalty? Well, yes, I support a limited application of the death penalty. The problem being that we already have a limited application of the death penalty in most of the states, especially the stand states of the Confederacy, where the death penalty is mostly limited to, you know, black people. Limited applicability. And then there was, while we're talking about death penalty, I received this little piece of information during the death penalty portion of the debate, which actually managed to last longer than the Flint water crisis portion of the debate. That's not Bernie's fault, and that's not even Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton's fault. That's entirely on MSNBC, because it looked like neither one of them was willing to reach across and try to strangle the other. And so, well, okay, nothing to see here. Let's move on. Isn't there something one of you will throw a pie at the over at the other over? But no, the death penalty, the death. I mean, that was another one of those clear moments. Bernie, progressive, says, no, you know, we ought not be in the death penalty business at all, anymore, ever, anywhere. Oh, wait. Coal smoke, it's going to be one of those nights. In case you didn't know it, this is from a news release dated February 3rd, which was, of course, Wednesday, which refers to something that happened on February 2nd, Tuesday. It was put out by the Reprieve Project. It comes, of course, from Georgistan. Tuesday night, the lights went out in Georgia, as it were. Brandon Astor was executed. Brandon Astor Jones. Was killed in the name of everyone who lives in the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. They did so via horizontal crucifixion. They could not get any actual pharmaceutical companies to provide them the necessary drugs with which to murder Brandon Astor Jones in the name of the people of the state of Georgia. So they just went out to a compounding pharmacy to stir up a batch of death. At one point in time, the particular formula being used was found to be contaminated with what were described as white chunks. Of what? We don't know. Because it's a secret in Georgia. Reprieve, a UK-based human rights organization, said, instead of questioning its approach in light of previous errors, the state has hidden its source behind a sweeping secrecy statute, increasing the risk of brutal and botched executions. Now, it's Georgia. They kill people there. What makes the execution of Brandon Astor Jones any different from any other execution? Well, at the time that they strapped him down to the gurney and stretched his arms out in the horizontal cruciform position, Brandon Astor Jones was 72 years old. He had been on death row in Georgia for 36 years. He was the oldest person on death row in the state. 72.
This is the governor. Get the commissioner of the Department of Corrections on the line. Commissioner. It has come to my attention that we have a 72-year-old death row inmate. Will you please kill the fuck out of him? I mean, obviously, he's been there 36 years, and he ain't learnt no lesson. I know. There's problems with the compound and drugs and all them white chunks. Hell, that's probably just feta cheese. Kill his ass, would you? I mean, we can't wait around for God Almighty to be doing it, because God Almighty doesn't seem too interested in bumping off Mr. Jones. So we're gonna have to give the Almighty a little push. It was 12:46 a.m. on February the 2nd. The United States Supreme Court denied him a stay of execution because, after all, as Uncle Nino Scalia has pointed out, you do not have a constitutional right not to be murdered in the name of the state in the U.S. Now, it was 5-2, the rejection of the stay. Now, there's no getting around the fact that Brandon Astor Jones did something bad, something horrible. He was convicted of the murder of Roger Tackett of Cobb County, Georgia, the manager of a gas station and convenience store. Apparently, Van Roosevelt Solomon and Brandon Astor Jones broke in after hours while he was doing his paperwork. Van Roosevelt Solomon went to see Jesus back in 1985. Among other things, his claim that the execution would be cruel and unusual was just sort of blown past. Well, of course it is. It's Georgia, baby. Mm-hmm. Yes. Executions ain't supposed to be fun, boy. I did mention that Brandon Astor Jones was a... Yes, of course. Limited death penalty. Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton is apparently a fan of the limited death penalty. The goddess of irony was there to make sure that maybe it was, she can be brutal, she can be hard, she can be rough. The goddess of irony may have been the one who made sure that Brandon Astor Jones got bumped off a day and a half or so before Hillary Clinton would declare that she is for the limited death penalty. You know, those cases where it's just so obvious that the state has no choice but to kill an individual. And whom did she cite? Timothy McVeigh. Well, there just aren't a hell of a lot of Timothy McVeighs going to the horizontal crucifix in this country, but there are a bunch of Brandon Astor Joneses. Granted, most of them don't get to live to be 72 years old. I mean, what the hell was the problem with letting him live out his life in prison? It probably would have cost the state of Georgia less to do that than it did to litigate and litigate and litigate their desperate desire to kill another black man. Yeah, I'm still trying to sort out that meaning for myself, Carol. Carol asks, limited death penalty? Does that mean you're only mostly dead, like in Princess Bride? No. Sorry, when it comes to the Brandon Astor Joneses of the world, they're going to kill you really, really, most sincerely dead, like, you know, the Munsters in Wizard of Oz sing. With the subject line, Georgia on my mind, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan says, we are not an advanced society.
And we're not. I mean, I would suspect if I was in earshot of our good friend Eric Bjorn down in South Carolina stand, where the uninsured, where the working class mostly has no insurance and are uninsured, and where they love to do them some executing, I'm pretty sure that Brother Eric would confirm that participating in the death penalty is further proof that we have not quite achieved that state of grace that is generally referred to as civilization. Limited death penalty. And that was, that's just a little bit of it. Ron and Raleigh with this subject line query. Hey, Bob, could you please tell me how we, as Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton says, will transition from for-profit health insurance systems to a single-payer universal system? The two things seem to be at odds. For-profit doesn't seem to work with a single-payer system. Multiple for-profit insurance companies don't seem to be compatible with a single-payer system. Yeah, I agree on both counts. And all I can say, perhaps Robert in Australia, for whom this is Saturday morning, and Jennifer in Australia, for whom this is Saturday morning, it could be of some assistance here, because the insurance system in Australia, if I understand correctly, when they passed what amounts to universal single payer health care, they told people, well, you are free to buy all the for profit insurance you want, and just left the system there. And I guess there are people who want that. Maybe because of the miracles of the free market, you can buy insurance that covers plastic surgery. Or maybe you can buy health insurance that will cover stuff that ordinarily is not covered under typical universal plans. Maybe you've got coverage that covers liver transplants or whatnot. I don't know. Oh, did I say the Munsters? I didn't mean the Munsters. I meant the Munchkins. I'm so glad I got folks that'll keep an eye on me. Oh, that's cute. I never thought about that. Bernie, there's a T-shirt out there you can get that's a stitched together Bert and Ernie face, half Ernie, half Bert, so that you get Bernie. Yeah. Ooh, that, yeah. That's a very cool shirt. So, I mean, that's the only thing I got, Ron. Let people choose. A public option. But again, it ain't going to happen as long as the House continues to be infested by the likes of Paul Ryan and Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Mo Brooks. We don't need Mo Brooks. We need Les Brooks. God, it would be hilarious if somebody would change their name to Les Brooks and run against Mo Brooks. We don't need Mo Brooks. We need Les Brooks. Oh, that'd be just delightful. There was other stuff. You can check my Twitter timeline if you wish. But the last thing I really said about the Kissinger business is that I kind of need, not as a progressive, not as a liberal, not as a cranky 53-year-old white guy, but as a human being, I I kind of need to think, I need to know that the Henry likes me, he really likes me comment made even the diehard Hillary supporters go, you look. I need that. I need that really badly. Because I need from time to time to feel like that there's a passing prayer of something resembling a moral center among people who call themselves Democrats. I mean, look, if Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to be an American for a really long time, if he had said, and I've just received a glowing recommendation from Henry Kissinger, my only response would be, well, of course you did. Water and murder always seeks its own level. I need Hillary's diehards to sort of reach out to her and say, don't do that anymore. Please don't do that anymore. Because that's one of those things that's so god-awful gross that it makes people wonder about who you really are deep down inside. Please, Hill, don't do that anymore. But he's a perfectly nice man. No, he's a murderer! He's a genocidalist! Don't do that anymore. Because I'm probably, I mean, you know, there's at least, according to polls, I got a note from Steve in New York a little bit ago. Asking, seen this? According to Quinnipiac, I never know. According to a poll after last night, Bernie, feel the burn, baby. Bernie is in a virtual tie with Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. Among national Democratic primary votes, it's at 44% to 42%. Bernie, in the space of a little more than a month, has made up something around 30 percentage points. That's huge. But there remains a 50-50 chance that I might wind up having to vote for Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton against one of the walking misanthropic monstrosities, whichever one it is, that the GOP nominates. And I mentioned that last night, and I go, well, you'll never send a message to the Democrats doing that. But I'm not trying to send a message. I'm trying to save Social Security with my own lonely, sad, pathetic, puny little vote. I'm trying to save Medicaid and Medicare. I'm trying to make sure that the Republicans don't burn the whole goddamn country down around us and use Granny and Grandpa for fucking kindling, okay? That's just where I am. And if you live in a safe state and you can engage in a purity vote, Jill Stein, baby, go for it. If it's Hillary. But I can't. Oh, I mean, hell's bells. You know what? this could be a competitive state. Nobody's ever going to worry about our five little pissant electoral votes here in West Virginia, although it's worth noting that had Al Gore carried West Virginia, we never would have had Dim Leader. Yeah, I know. We could be competitive here if Trump collapses. And he's looking kind of collapsy. It is still possible that the real fight is between Rubio, Little Marco, and Raffaelito, with Jebbia somewhere in the far distance saying, "Clap, please." Jesus, that was the most pathetic. It wasn't sweet like Linus in Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. "Lights, please." No, "Clap, please. I have to go. I have to see my mother after this is over." And you don't know what it's like when she casts her baleful gaze on you and see,
I always said your brother was the better one. See? I'll never forget how hard it was potty training you at gunpoint, Jebbia.
Clap, please. Well, Ron, that's true. Ron in Raleigh says, I think the vast majority of Americans have a very superficial view of Dr. Mengele. Dr. Kissinger. Hey, he's been around so long working for so many presidents, people believe that he can't be all bad. Well, you know, Hitler liked dogs. Oh, shit! 706. Who had 706? Damn it, Gerald! Well, that's okay. I'll deliver him his winnings. I think we're probably gonna quaff a beer together this evening. With regard to healthcare in Australia, Diane notes that subject line Kansas Oz. The story of Oz would have been cooler with the Munsters in it. I couldn't agree more. Lily? Never happens to John Wayne. In Australia, Jennifer, said, in regard to healthcare, says sometimes it's not a choice. There's a man who plays guitar in front of the mall, a quiet genius. He's poor, so he has chosen to go public option. Poor here means you can still have a lawn, so a few months ago, when mowing his lawn, he fell and snapped his hip. He was given a new metal hip free, and I'm so pleased he's back playing in front of the mall. I need his music in my life. What would have happened to him in Merca? Lawn fertilizer? Well, let's just say dust in the wind. Yeah. Carol noting, Billy Graham prayed with a lot of presidents, too. Like, that was a good thing. Oh, I prayed with Nixon and Henry.
Oh, Henry, I realize you're one of those Christ killers, but you've got a chance to save your immortal soul here. Reverend Graham is here, and he's come here to pray with me. We're going to pray for America's return to Christ, and we can have that if we can just do something about the Jews in Hollywood. Oh, sorry, Henry. Get on your knees, Henry. On your knees!
Yes, mein Führer. Mein President. Oh, and by the way, 9 minutes past the hour, and there are birthday greetings to go out this evening. Off in the far-flung vast reaches of the frozen north stands a hillbilly. Ron, he is by name.
brilliant conversationalist, globetrotter, Renaissance man. And today is Ron's birthday. I don't know if you're listening, Ron, but if you are, happy birthday. Hopefully somebody within the Horn Family Commune congregation will tell him that we all wish him a most happy natal anniversary. Bon anniversaire. In regard to somebody telling Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, you know, don't do that. In New York, Steve says, don't hold your breath. I'm trying to. You don't know what the coal smoke smells like in here. Steve says, don't hold your breath. Warmongers is as warmongers does. Mm-hmm. So there... in the chat room, apparently playing along with the Henry and Dick shtick. Dick shtick? Isn't that, did they send one of those out to the bird sanctuary? Oh, never mind. But playing along, Lottie says, Henry, get your hand off my fly. Yes, mein Führer, mein President. Oh, damn, I didn't realize that. Happy birthday yesterday to Ron and Raleigh. Very, very happy birthday. What a lovely community we have here. So it's 11 minutes past the hour, and it is Friday on the front porch, and it is time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, as we have for rather a very long time now. And just see what's on folks' mind. We can certainly talk about the latest doings in Oregon. We've got some fun stuff to talk about. Hey, look, fracking. Hey, look, California. We've got some senatorial stupidity that will probably make you run screaming into the night. Mm-hmm. We have a flying dildo. I think this is going to be the year that we see the dildo emerge as a potent symbol of political unrest. Yeah. So all of that is all of that's a possibility, and whatever else you want to bring to the conversation. This is Conversation Radio, after all, and you are welcome to chime in. Listen, if you've never participated in the in Friday on the Front Porch, all you got to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, on Skype, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail that leads to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you again to Roger for getting us started and getting rounded up to $4. We've got $100.42 remaining, courtesy of Harold and the Society, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Secret suck. Hurt robes. Yeah. We've got $100.42 of rounding up money, courtesy of Harold and the Secret Open Carry. Sir Hurt robes. And about $325 to raise this evening. So, well, we'll see if we get there. My, and we'll only know by the time we get to the end of the program. Quick note coming from Steve in New York. I would like to bestow my duteous blessing upon those celebrating birthdays on the horn. He provides a certificate of ordination. This document hereby affirms that Steve has been ordained by the Church of the Latter-day Dude. A pluribus dudenum, in dude we trust. That certificate really brings the whole filibobster together. All right, y'all. Fire up the extraordinary ordinary round table, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. We'll be back. I'm Bob. Yeah, there was a really neat idea put forward in the chat room while that was playing. We need a song parody written. Dick Cheney's Got 100 Hearts. That would work nicely. Yeah. Who did that? Who said that? Oh, that was Lottie. Not surprised at all. 18 minutes past the hour, and let's run over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, where Sparky is standing by. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
Well, I don't know. You want to hear my Kissinger story?
You have a Kissinger story?
Yeah.
Stand not upon the order of your telling, but tell it once.
Well, back when I was a 22-year-old airman in the United States Air Force, TDY to Guam, his plane landed there with a layover going to China. So I got to work on his plane. They had a fire detector on the number 2 engine go out.
just the fire detector, though.
Yeah, it goes into trouble, and then they can check the engine, and they don't see no flames. They're a little electric device. They're making brake contact in there, and it sends a current through it. And when they reach a certain temperature, they'll make the contact.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about how history might have changed.
But there was no fire on the engine.
Damn it!
I don't know. Where planes with Henry Kissinger on them are concerned, the words "spun in" really lose their horror.
But that wasn't even the good part.
There's a good part?
Well, I had never seen one. There was a Vulcan bomber from New Zealand parked there on the visitor's ramp. I'd never seen one before, but it, you know, had the Kiwi on the tail there. Everybody wanted to go over and look at the bomber. Because we looked at Kissinger's plane was just a 707, basic C-135. You know, if we'd worked on hundreds of them. So that was the good part of that night.
You know, I guess it just stands to reason when you've been running, when you've been building a community for 10 years, somebody's going to have a Kissinger story.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Amazing. So, are you getting rained on?
No, we're starting to, spring is starting out here.
Oh, for pity's sakes.
It's getting warmer by the day.
How long before you're back in the man cave?
Oh, I don't know. I got some problems with the other man cave computer to fix. And then since my Wi-Fi router went out, I've got to make sure the remote is mated to the new router, the Wi-Fi extender.
Yeah.
So that's been a problem I have to deal with. But I haven't worried about it because the man cave's like an ice box most of the time. It's starting to warm up.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's that window of opportunity between icebox and blast furnace.
Yeah.
If I understand correctly.
It is coming. Well, there's March, April, May, and then June, July, and August, a blast furnace possibility. And then September and October are just beautiful. So you only have 3 months of heat, really. Hopefully. But anyway, the snow's beautiful.
Nice and snowy up on top of Mount Lassen.
Oh, yeah. And Chef. All the way around the valley. Coast Range, the Trinity Alps, they're all white with snow.
That's at least modestly reassuring, but the drought, the drought does continue, right?
Yeah, because it's going to take more than this one season to get stuff back to where it was. I mean, it'll build up the level, but it was so low, you can't recover in the reservoirs in one season.
Oh, not by a long shot.
So anyway, I was going to tell you, thanks for all your Hillary reports. Because if you saw my post on your tweet there, I had to mute her every time she came on. The first thing I thought of was the chalkboard effect. And then the way she does her makeup, man, their cheek jowls driving me nuts when she talks, so I can't watch her.
Well, I sat here for the most part just trying really hard to be fair about things and listen and you know, what's the difference between a progressive and a progressive who gets things realistically done and all of that silliness. But when we got to Henry Kissinger, I just plump unglued.
You should have had a hockey puck handy, Bob.
Well, that's the problem. I don't get one. I'm not allowed. I have to sit here all lashed to the mast like Odysseus listening to the sirens.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, good evening. Good evening, Billable Rick.
Hey, good evening. Good evening. I've been following the saga of the Malheur militant malcontents, I guess I'll call them.
Yeah, they didn't exactly get the book thrown at them, did they?
No, I definitely call the approach of the prosecution so far small ball. It's not to mean that it's not going to, it doesn't mean it's not going to be superseded at some point in time, but I think they're very early in their investigative stage. I think they're being careful about who they charge with what. And they haven't been able to access the buildings, and so they don't know who's like illegally accessed, you know, federal records, federal employee records, and things of that nature, and who exactly did what. So, it's possible they're going to try and get some cooperating witnesses to testify against, let's say, the ringleaders like Ammon and, the real
Ryan.
Ryan. Did you see his funny face that he made in his mugshot? Did you notice that?
Rick, that is his face.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's like, I forget what the exact explanation was, but like his dad ran over his face with a truck or something when he was a kid.
Oh, God. Because I thought he was making a funny face. I was like thinking, geez, what's the deal here? Why would you? that's not putting your best face forward, I guess.
Get out. Quit digging. Quit digging, Rick.
Yep. No, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, did you look at that link I sent you before?
Yeah, earlier? No. Yeah, I mean, the Oregon Live is a fount of information. I sent you an email, Bob, about the basically quoting a portion of the Oregon Sheriff Association statement concerning the Malheur takeover and, how this is not how things are supposed to work in this so-called democracy here. It's not too long. I could read it if you want.
Yeah, go ahead. And then, I did see the link, and we're gonna talk about that in a minute, Sparky.
Okay. Right. Okay. So basically, they represent all 36 sheriffs for the county sheriffs in Oregon. And the pertinent part is this: we are a nation of laws, and the executive branch cannot override the laws passed by the legislative branch. Nor can we ignore the clear guidance of the judicial branch. There is a process for changing the laws of our great nation and for amending our Constitution, and that process does not involve the armed takeover of government facilities and disruption of an entire community. We fully support the expression of political opinions and advocating for change within the legal system. That is what sets our country apart from developing countries where the government is changed by an armed takeover, i.e. Somalia. I had added that. And then it continues, recently men and women have broken the law and encouraged others to take up arms against our local and federal governments. These individuals have used firearms and their interpretation of the Constitution to justify their criminal behavior. These militia men and women have broken into publicly owned buildings, disrespected Native American heritage, and intimidated and harassed local residents and officials. These men and women are asking for change, and we support the right to challenge our government to make change. However, we do not agree with or support any citizen or elected official who would advocate for change in a manner that includes illegal action, threats of violence, or violence against any citizen of the United States. So I thought that was very appropriate, that statement.
Well, it is, because and it's not exactly a radical interpretation of the system as it exists.
No, that's what you learn in civics, at least when they used to teach it in high school, anyway.
Right.
The three branches of government, we're supposed to be a nation of laws, not men, and, this and this, that, and the other thing, you got to support the rule of law, although that took a beating during the Clinton impeachment hearings and so forth, that whole phrase. It's become kind of a joke. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad that, a statement like this has to be read like how what 230 years or 40 years after, you know, after the founding of the U.S. Yeah, we're going on 240 years now, aren't we? This July 4th.
It's been puttering along reasonably well, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it has its moments, obviously, like the, you know, War of Northern Aggression, and I call it Lincoln's mistake myself. But
well, of course you do. Yeah, I mean, that's and your Confederate flag says heritage, not hate, right?
Hey, there you go. Yeah.
Well, your point is well taken about it's kind of hard to charge, you know, the futzing around with federal, with personal data, personnel data, federal data, whatever, because they really can't see it.
Right.
And, of course, the dummies that are still there, and they're still there. I didn't check. Like I said, I was away for most of the day today. The dummies are still there, aren't they?
As far as I know, yeah. Yeah, they apparently got earlier this week. They got onto like a kind of like an internet radio show, and they were on for like a few hours talking to like the host of it, I guess. So I didn't.
What, somebody's subbing for Pete Santilli now?
Well, it's kind of along those lines. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think
there's several of them out there.
Yeah. So I guess they're down to one phone, which the FBI has provided to communicate to the outside world. So, you know.
Right, because all their other phones just ring into the FBI now, which I find hilarious.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm supposed to feel some sort of degree of outrage or something that these poor souls are being put upon by the vast resources of the national security state. But you know, they're I want to choose my words carefully. Dickheads, and so consequently, no.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting. Their defense strategy is coming clear very quickly. What you know, the lawyer gave I think what the, like a 12-minute statement to the media, like after his initial after Ammon's initial appearance. And, well, I guess before I get onto the merits of it, if you want to call it that, right after that, for the next 3 minutes of the YouTube thing, there was a series of, like, biblical, like, scriptures and stuff that a guy was reading, which was totally bizarre. but what...
Well,
you know,
I mean, bizarre to you. I mean, to them, it was prophetical.
Oh, there you go. Prophetical, yes. Prophetical. But you know what I think the lawyers are trying to do is they're trying to somehow engender sympathy in the community for Ammon to sort of like soften up, you know, the possible juror pool to be more sympathetic to the argument that hey, in order to exercise our First Amendment right to free speech, we have to go ahead and we have to go around and carry guns with us. And go into, you know, and if we disagree with government policies, we, you know, by carrying those guns, that shows that we, you know, believe in the Second Amendment, basically.
Well, what Sparky was referring to a couple of minutes ago, another of the Bundy Bunch, that's the way we became the Bundy Bunch, another
you
one is going to take his... I'm sorry?
You have another song in you. You already made one up earlier.
Yeah, I know.
I like that one.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. It turns out that... what's his name? Cliven Lance Bundy, age 35, is going to be doing a little bit of... a little bit of cooler time. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he got thrown out of a court, a specialty court program for drug abusers. And he was under house arrest, and he was supposed to be getting inpatient treatment and living in a sober living house. This all in court records out in Clark County. He had made it to stage 3. He was nearing graduation when he just stopped going to court anymore.
Oh.
And they found, federal agents found him in the Jean Dry Lake bed after he was found amongst a group of all-terrain vehicles riding outside their permitted area on public lands. So of course, this was necessarily a patriotic protest, because when ATVs are outlawed, only outlaws will have ATVs. No, that's patriots. Patriots. When ATVs are outlawed, only patriots will have ATVs.
Bob, patriots. Come on, you got to get the verbiage right there.
It looks like, by the way, Cliven Lance is one of 14 Bundys. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's the oldest Bundy, Jesus Christ Bundy. but he's going to be going up the river on, wait a minute, burglary and firearms charges. Well, I will be dipped.
Jeez, I'm just totally shocked. I mean, that whole family, I think, is there a single one of them that doesn't have some kind of criminal record?
Well, I mean, it's this is where I would cue up Hank Williams Jr. saying, "It's a family tradition." Man, I'm just a little songbird this evening, aren't I?
Well, it must be the spring that you're enjoying, except for that coal smoke.
No, I think it's just the radiation wearing off, Rick.
Do you know this guy that wrote that little annotations, that pocket constitution, Cleon Skousen?
Oh, do I know about? Yeah, oh, I know about Cleon Skousen. Oh, that is one seriously weird sumbitch.
Well, that's where they get their information.
Oh, that's where they're getting their crazy.
Yeah, that's because that little pocket constitution they got has his annotations in it or something.
Well, the Beckerhead is a big fan of Cleon Skousen. And Cleon Skousen, who didn't believe in government that so much, was very happy to take a government job with under the FDR administration in the New Deal. Yeah, of course. Hypocrisy is never really very far away when it comes to these freaks.
And you know what happened today, don't you?
Yeah, well, no.
They buried Lavoy Finnegan.
Lavoy wears his war wounds like a crown.
You know what the mourners wore?
Urine-colored snake flag clothing?
No, like a 2-inch by 2-inch piece of blue tarp.
Oh, well, apparently they're having a rally tomorrow, and this is deeply offensive. They're having a rally tomorrow in which everybody is asked to bring a sign that says, "Hands up, don't shoot." You know, in complete and absolute mockery of the real issue that is a problem for, an epidemic in the black community. You know, cops blowing away mostly young black people.
Well, what they need to add to that slogan, Bob, is "Hands up, don't shoot. Give me a chance to reach for my sidearm."
It's hands up, don't shoot. Give me two chances to reach for my sidearm.
There you go. Well, I guess it would be the shoulder holster in his case.
Well, I mean, I think it was in his pocket. He just forgot.
I don't know what the fuck happened to him.
He probably, the people who support Lavoy Finkham probably think he should have been given a third chance to get to that gun down in his freedom boots.
Yeah, I mean, that way maybe he could have taken someone with him, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm somewhat gratified that at least it wasn't the FBI that shot him, and it was the state police instead. I mean,
yeah, it was the Oregon State Police, but that's not slowing the patriots down from screaming that the FBI killed Lavoy Finkham.
Well, no, of course not. No. You know, I guess they don't recognize the state government either. That's why they drive around without license plates, without driver's licenses. You know, they don't believe in paying any taxes. You know.
And they, by God, don't have no gold fringe on no Merkin flag.
There you go. There you go. Now, what happens? What happens if the sheriff imposes a tax? Would they pay that then? What do you think?
Well, that would probably prove that he was just a tool of big government.
There you go. There you go.
And not a true constitutional shire reeve.
Jeez. Oh, I tell
you. You realize what a challenge it is to stay sober sometimes with this kind of stuff banging around out there? It's horrifying.
Oh, it's crazy, Bob. I mean, when I was with the government, about a fourth of my cases were cases brought by nuts like, you know, the Bundy clan, in terms of by these sovereign citizens, you know, these tax protesters and, you know, claiming that the United States is a corporation located in Washington, D.C., and it only has jurisdiction over people who live in Washington, D.C. and the U.S. territories and possessions, but not within the, you know, sovereign 50 states. And, I mean, all these crazy theories to try and avoid having to pay taxes. I mean, you know, if these cats spent, like, half as much energy trying to be productive, you know, earning an income as they do by, you know, coming up with these crazy theories, they'd be, you know, doing great. But obviously they've got a screw or two loose or three or maybe their entire gray settlings that pass for their brains.
Oh, well, which brings me to another story. Our buddy, the Angry Indian, pointed this out to me, and I was of two minds as to whether to even mention it. But Anonymous has decided to demand that the FBI release all the things concerning the cold-blooded killing of Lavoie Finkham.
Really? Anonymous? Yes. I know they don't like the government, but, you know, they usually have a little more rationality to...
Well, they usually have a little bit more brains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, we've got it. In memory of Lavoie Finkham, Devin has given us another potential song parody. Gimme two draws, gimme two draws, mister. Gimme two draws for my gun. Never mind. Yeah.
Well, did you read that all the...
I'll be here all night.
All the federal facilities are on alert in southern Oregon and northern California. The game preserves, the Forest Service, the BLM.
No, I didn't realize that, but it probably makes sense.
They've increased security at all the... There's one up in the Modoc. There's a fish and wildlife facility up there. And then just around Klamath Falls, there's another game preserve. But there's up where my steps on Modoc County is Sparsely County. It's just like Harney County, pretty much. I mean, there's a few more people, but the federal and state government is pretty much all the workforce there anymore. And what they do to maintain the land, because there's a lot of like spring and summer work jobs that come up. What do you call them? Seasonal work that comes up. And that's what they're really upset about up at the Mount Hood too, is because all the seasonal work has got to get done at the beginning after the winter comes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I hope that the feds and the state, I guess it'd be Utah, had a lot of undercover people making notations of all the vehicle license plates of folks who attended Mr. Finkham's funeral today. Because
tyranny,
you know,
tyranny.
Well, you know,
I saw one little short video on Oregon standoff this afternoon. And a person said he had to park over a mile away from where the funeral was taking place and walk.
No, that is a little bit creepy if they were taking down license plate numbers, but...
Well, I'm just saying they should.
Well, the one guy was seen at the funeral, Blaine Cooper.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah.
Isn't there an indictment out for him?
No, he wasn't listed.
Oh, he's the rat.
That's what they say on Twitter.
Yeah, I think I've seen him referred to as a government informant in the various posts on Oregon Live that I've read now and again.
Well, his name's not even Blaine Cooper, right?
Yeah, it's something else. He came out of the Arizona militia movement with Ratzheimer or whatever.
Yeah, Crackerheimer. Who is presently running his legal defense. Legal defense hustle. Yeah, I know.
So would you? How much money is in their legal defense fund?
I don't know.
Probably thousands by now, right? I mean,
well, I'm certainly hoping it's in Confederate money.
Oh, there you go. Hey, that would be valuable these days, Bob.
Oh, well, yeah, imagine, you know, if you've got some of great-great-great-great-great-granny's Confederate war bonds, I wouldn't be getting rid of them. They could be currency just someday soon.
Never know. Once the South rises again.
South's going to rise again.
Oh, man. What a crazy country this has become. Ah. Oh. Maybe it's always been this crazy. I don't know. I don't remember it being this crazy, though.
Well, just by way of wandering off in another direction for a second, to give us a little more gristle to chew. I was sitting here a couple of days ago. I was here in the studio. Agnes was in the room next to me, and I heard a kwomp. Yeah, it didn't rattle the windows or anything, but after you live here a while, you get to where you can recognize these things. I said, "How are you?" I said, "You hear that, honey?" And she said, "Yep." I said, "Sound like a blast to me." She said, "Me too." According to WSAZ-TV, Dateline Logan County, West Virginia, a mine blast caused the ground to shake early Wednesday evening in the Logan area, and some people associated it with an earthquake. According to a report from the U.S. Geological Survey, it was just before 5 o'clock on Wednesday. No injuries were reported. The USGS said the blast caused enough of an impact to register seismically, but it wasn't an earthquake. And the thing is, there's not much in the way of underground mining going on down there. So there were no mine companies saying, "Yeah, it was ours." So this is one that just sort of blew up, maybe an old mine where the gas did right, and who knows why.
Or maybe there's some militias doing demolitions practice, Bob.
Don't even. Don't you dare. But meanwhile, and this'll matter to you guys out there, there's a new study out, and it was released yesterday, and this new study ties the injection of toxic waste from oil and gas drilling in California, the injection of it into old wells, to earthquakes. It's the first time that's been officially done. Over at Think Progress, Samantha Page writes, "The study comes as fracking in California is growing in scope and in attention. During fracking, chemical-laced saline water," I don't think it's laced, I think it's laden, is injected at high pressure thousands of meters underground, loosening deposits of oil and gas. The process, as well as other forms of so-called enhanced oil recovery, creates huge amounts of wastewater, which is often disposed of by being injected into storage wells. It's also occasionally reused in agriculture or dumped in the ocean. Great ideas, boys. Great ideas. And this new study links a set of 2005 earthquakes near Bakersfield to toxic frack waste disposal in injection wells. And apparently, it can trigger earthquakes miles away. Nice, huh?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, we. I guess the thing I don't understand is why you know, Jerry Brown is so gung ho for fracking. You know, that really pisses me off about him. I guess he's in the pocket of the big oil companies, just like a lot of other politicians are, you know?
Well, I presume that being a little bit more of a forward-thinking state than, say, West Virginia, there's probably some pretty significant extraction taxes involved, aren't there?
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, there's your answer.
That went into effect a couple of years ago.
Okay. But I think, by and large, though, the hydrocarbon industries are under a lot of fire in California, especially with that whole situation out in the western part of San Fernando Valley.
Porter Ranch? Yeah.
Yeah, Porter Ranch. Yeah, yeah. you know, that's just, it's incredible the amount of methane that's being released from that disaster, you know? I don't know what the status is with regard to the drilling of a so-called relief well to allow them to finally cap this thing off so we don't have more and more emissions going out. But yeah, I guess there's criminal charges that have been brought by the state of California against the owners and operators of that facility.
Yeah, what was it, yesterday or the day before? Mm-hmm. The Attorney General.
Yeah, Kamala Harris, the Attorney General.
Yeah, she's running for boxer seat.
She's running for governor, right?
No, for senator.
Oh, for senator.
Yeah,
okay.
For the seat that Barbara Boxer is vacating.
Okay, because she was a little slow to come out and bring charges against these folks. I think she was starting to get some heat for that.
Probably. She'd been on the campaign. Running around the state campaign, and you know.
Okay, and maybe she was reluctant to get, you know, big oil upset at her and, you know, spend against her. I mean, who knows? Is she who's her opponent? Do you know?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Meg Whitman can run again.
Oh God!
I read in the paper my congressman has got two Republicans challenging him.
Hmm.
He's a Republican too, so.
He's got a couple other Republicans challenging him?
Yeah, Doug LaMoffa is my congressman.
Okay.
So,
well,
tell me if I'm crazy here, guys. Should the Flint water crisis have gotten more than... Okay, it took like an hour and 43 minutes to get to it in the pageant last night. Should it have... gotten more than like 40 seconds?
Of course.
So should the climate change.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's and the way, you know, the way the Hilarion on my page explained it, well, they both agreed on it, so there was nothing to say. There was a ton to say. How about some questions from Joke Toad and Rachel?
Yeah, but Joke Toad was trying to get them to fight.
Yeah, they wouldn't fight. Not that much, a little bit.
So
yeah.
What you do when they don't fight, you change the subject.
Right, and that's what they did. Well, okay, enough about the poisoned children. Screw them. How about the TPP? Will you guys throw pies at each other over the TPP?
Jeez. I mean, a question I would like to ask is, are you in favor of hanging Governor Rick Snyder for appointing emergency administrators to cities, which eventually caused this disaster? I mean, that would be a good question, I think. You'd never hear it on the mainstream media, though, of course.
No. But the facts are the facts, and this is a Reuters story. The highest level at the highest levels of Michigan state government, they were aware. The Legionnaires' disease thing? I mean, I heard that and went, bruh, 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 what? It turns out there's a link between the Flint water crisis and Legionnaires' disease. And they were finding out about it months before Rick Snyder said he knew anything about it.
I'd heard that as well.
Almost a year ago, last March, although Snyder's spokes creep, as the story goes, rejected the report. Apparently, a guy named Harvey Hollins and the former head of the Department of Environmental Quality in Michigan, Dan Wyant, were made aware of the increase in Legionnaires' disease outbreaks in Genesee County, which is where Flint is. And a county health they were also made aware that a county health official was saying that the Flint River was the cause. And then, well, it was this January when state officials said, hey, well, you know, we've had a spike in the disease and about 10 people dead. I mean, you know, so what?
Stuff happens, you know, Bob?
Right, but the Snyder creeps say, it is beyond irresponsible for anybody to say that, even if it's true. Jesus.
Well, I mean, this is sort of a snapshot of what happens when you basically, you know, shrink government to the point where it can be drowned in a bathtub. Just look at what's happening in Kansas, you know, and you look at cities like Flint, Michigan, and, you know, other cities in Michigan that have been taken over by these emergency managers. I can foresee a situation where the citizens who have no representation anymore would just revolt, basically. And, you know, bring their pitchforks and their torches and march on the emergency manager's office and force them out, you know? And I could hardly blame them, actually. I mean, they'd have a lot more justification for doing that than the, you know, bird brains in Oregon taking over, you know, the Malheur Wildlife Sanctuary.
Well, so while we're on the subject of toxic water, you guys may be interested to know that here, more than, well, two years after the Freedom disaster, in which Freedom, 10,000 gallons of Freedom dumped into the Elk River here in West Virginia, a federal judge imposed a $900,000 criminal fine on Freedom Industries. Mm-hmm. Here's the fun part. They're never going to pay a nickel.
Didn't they go bankrupt?
Yeah.
Ken Ward writes, U.S. District Judge Thomas Johnston said he would make any payment of the fine contingent upon Freedom first satisfying in full all claims filed against it in federal bankruptcy court. But he also said, that ain't going to happen. There's no way. Now, this is a U.S. district judge, okay? I mean, I mentioned that because you know what that means, Rick. This is a U.S. district judge, or as Ammonium Nitrate Bundy would say, this is an Article III constitutional judge.
Right.
And the U.S. district judge said, there's no way the fine will ever be paid. I'm not generally a fan of symbolic sentencing, but if there's any deterrent value at all, if it's not going to be paid, I might as well enter the maximum fine. So, just to review, the maximum fine for poisoning 300,000 people is $900,000. That's $3 per poisoned person.
Hell, I guess crime really does pay. Didn't it cost like...
Well, it don't cost much, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it cost Jebbia a whole lot more to get every vote in Iowa, the caucuses, you know? Like 20 million per vote or something crazy like that?
Thereabouts.
It was like 2,500 or 2,700.
Okay, maybe I'm several... decimal points off, but I knew it was a hell of a lot of money for the few votes he got.
And I do love lawyer weasel speak. a guy named Robert Light, L-E-I-G-H-T, who is a pettifogger from Pittsburgh, a Pittsburgh pettifogger. Ooh, that sounds like a minor league ball club. So, freedom, are you familiar with this sort of tormented use of the word would in court, Rick? Freedom would offer its apology to the citizens of Charleston for its actions in this case. Which, yeah. In terms of the actual meaning of the English language, as far as I can tell, as a longtime practitioner of the art of knowing words, that means that they haven't tendered anything. They would, but they haven't.
They could. Yeah. It's a conditional kind of a thing, which may or may not be ever satisfied. The condition may or may not ever be satisfied. I try to avoid using the word would as much as possible, just because it's very imprecise, you know? Kind of a passive way of speaking as well. I don't like to write in the passive sense.
That's very weak writing.
Yeah.
Don't you guys get Weasel Speak 101 in law school?
No,
it actually happens sort of by osmosis.
We do have to take legal research and writing courses or advocacy courses, at least I did.
But there's one more story to go with the whole $3 per poisoned person. It may be $9. At least 100,000 people are estimated to have suffered symptoms as a result of the freedom disaster, but 300,000 people were subjected to it. Remember, they let the poison flow in West Virginia for somewhere between 6 and 12 hours before they told anybody, hey, don't drink the water. Don't even bathe in it. No, don't use the water, okay? Yeah, that took a while. But 100,000 people probably experienced symptoms, so that would be $9 per poisoning. But it goes down to $3 if you consider everybody who was in the affected group. So yesterday, Michael E. Burdett, who is the former plant manager at Freedom Industries, who had been found guilty of his part in the poisoning of, 300,000 people. Well, he was sentenced. He was sentenced to 3 years of probation. And just, I got to let you know before I say the rest of it, that your outrage meters are going to go off. The glass is going to break in the meter, okay?
Put the duct tape, a hockey puck firmly in the mouth?
No, this ain't hockey puck. This is just, no. Okay. The needle's going to peg and the glass is going to break.
I guess it's a Thorazine dart time. Maybe.
Yeah, that's more along the lines.
Okay.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Community service.
No, 3 years probation and a $2,500 fine.
Oh, jeez.
That is the legal minimum. For negligent discharge of a pollutant, which is a crime under the Clean Water Act, a misdemeanor.
Oh, jeez.
Michael Burdett, an engineer, said, I did not fully appreciate the environmental compliance and regulatory issues. I take responsibility for my role in not being sure the company was in compliance.
So, Bob, let me ask you this here.
We're not done with the screaming yet.
Oh, okay.
That was the statutory minimum, and the statutory minimum was requested by the United States Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia because of their substantial compliance in helping with the case. And then the guy who imposed the $900,000 fine and said, look, this is never going to be paid, Judge Thomas E. Johnston, he said, you're hardly a criminal.
I'm surprised he didn't apologize for the state having, or for the federal government bringing charges against the guy,
Yeah.
BP, we're sorry. We shouldn't have,
We hope we didn't. We hope we didn't inconvenience you too much. Have you gotten your life back?
Yeah. Can we powder your bottom? Would that help you?
So sentencing is still coming up for William Tiz, Dennis Farrell, and Gary Southern. One wonders. I will not be particularly surprised, however, if a story breaks that the U.S. attorney agreed to go to jail in their place.
Oh, jeez.
Now, that's some ass kissing right there.
Jeez, I tell you. That's crazy. That's crazy. You know, what is the recourse of a West Virginian who, let's say, develops cancer from this water poisoning down the road?
Zip.
What, $9 of damages or
$3? Zip. Zip.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nuts. Nuts.
Oh, our teabagger legislature has got the bit in its damn teeth, and it's getting zany. They've introduced a bill that would allow hospitals. Did I lose you guys? State-run hospitals would be sold for profit. HB 4352 would allow the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources to sell a number of hospitals and divest itself of running them by July 1st, 2017 because, you know, things are ever so much better when they're run for a profit.
Yeah, I mean, what could possibly go wrong, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, when you have the profit motive, police.
Who in their right mind would want to buy into West Virginia right now?
We got lots of sick people that, you know, they're a resource, and money can be extracted from them through things like Medicaid, Medicare, for-profit insurance. All you have to do is not deliver much in the way of services.
Right.
You're sick. That'll be you're sick. That'll be $10,000, please.
Can I ask a question?
Hey, Charlie.
Doesn't our Constitution say that no man can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process?
It is in there.
Well, what happens when somebody cannot afford health care and they're deprived of health care and they die?
That's capitalism. We go to church and we praise God. We praise capitalist Jesus.
But still, our Constitution says no man can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process.
What that means the government can't do it, but the free market is free to do it.
Well, people. Hi there, folks.
Hey, Larry.
People.
Who's echoing?
People will
there he is.
Use the Constitution when it's to their benefit to support the Constitution, and when it's not to their benefit, they'll dismiss whatever it is that the Constitution says. So that's just the way that... God, I wish I could... You know, I wish I could find a way to get into office there and kick the coal companies in the ass. I really wish somebody in the legislature would get something and get some balls or get something and just kick the coal companies, you know, and do it consistently for about 40 years, and then maybe things would turn around.
Larry, you will never be elected so much as dog catcher on a platform like that here.
You got to mute after you talk, Larry.
Okay.
No, but Charlie, did you get what I was getting at? That the government can't deprive you, but the free market damn sure can, especially if they can make a dollar doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it just, I'm beside myself, the number of people that claim to be religious and stuff like that, and they can stand by and just watch somebody die and say, well, if you can't afford health care, there's nothing that says we have to give it to him.
Well, you know what they say, Charlie? They say, well, if you, you know, if I'm poor or if I can't get health care, that must be God's will.
There'll be pie in the sky when I die.
Yeah, right.
And you know, and Charlie, the Republicans do have a health care plan. You, I'm sure you're familiar with it. Be sure you don't get sick, and if you do get sick, die quickly.
Yeah, die quickly.
You don't want to die too quickly because you'll be able to collect from your life insurance. They don't want you to. They want you to live long enough where you'll probably default on your life insurance, so you won't have to.
So you won't
be able to collect on the life insurance policy.
Yeah, well, that's true, I suppose. No, you know, unfortunately, there is no constitutional right to health care. That was one of the was it the 5 or 10 freedoms that FDR was trying to get into?
I thought it was the 4 freedoms.
Oh, the 4 freedoms. Okay, maybe it was one of the 4 freedoms. And you know, there is no right to you know, to health care. I mean, the Affordable Care Act has sort of, you know, created kind of a half-assed sort of a right to health care, but you know, it's really not that great, especially since we're still at the, you know, tender mercies of the for-profit health insurance companies.
You remember what Obama said? Obama said, you know, folks, if I were starting from scratch, we'd have single payer health care. But I can't just simply go in there and tear down a system and an institution that's already in place and put something new in. I just can't do that. You remember when he said that, Bob, don't you? And everybody else?
Oh, yeah, Larry. I got a notice in the mail today that I need for the alerting me that process I need to go through to sign up for Medicare. Won't you please, Anthem Blue Shield, make us your health care supplemental provider when you go on Medicare?
You know the hoops that we have to go through for durable medical equipment and the hoops we have to go through for just about any other procedure that we need, because they're so damn concerned about Medicare fraud, because a few big companies get away with it, then all the other companies, including the consumers, have to suffer. And it's, you know, and that's the way it is. And my durable, you know, my wheelchair place that services my wheelchair says, well, we tell people all the time to call Medicare and complain about it. And when I call Medicare, they say, look, if you want the help, you will do what we tell you to do. Otherwise, find another way to pay for it or go without.
Well, this is a good time to bring in something. I mentioned our buddy Robert in Australia a little bit ago, and I've got an email from Robert. I also got one from Ray down in Florida. Subject line: Pay or Die. Ray says, even after 25 years in nursing, give us this amount of money or die fits every definition of extortion I've ever heard. And there's a lot of truth in that. Meanwhile, by way of explaining how to get from point A to point single payer, Robert in Australia writes, in 1975, the Labor Party in Australia introduced universal single payer health care. We had private health insurance companies in Australia prior to 1975. Those who didn't have any health welcomed it. Health insurance. Those who had private health insurance either gave it up or kept it, depending on what they could afford and how they felt about socialism. This is where it gets complicated. We have public and private hospitals in Australia. If you went 100% with USPHC, you went to a public hospital. If you had had private health insurance, you had a choice. You could go private or public. You could go to a 100% private hospital where the care was as good as any public hospital, just with a private room, and maybe you could demand a particular doctor. I always remember the private health insurance commercial on TV with the young man needing a non-urgent operation on his knee, being told by his doctor that he'd have to wait because he's using the public system. But I'm in pain, doctor. Fast rewind the tape. I'm with private health insurance company X, doc. I want my knee operated on tomorrow in the top hospital by the top surgeon. Okay, says the doctor. The top doctor must be really busy, I always thought. What has happened over the last 41 years, what 41 years, is that a lot of people use the public system while maintaining private health insurance for emergencies. What those emergencies are, I don't know. I assume non-urgent surgery, i.e. cosmetic. The private health insurance companies during the reign of John Howard decided to put up their fees by a whopping amount, resulting in people dropping out in droves. Go figure. John Howard's solution was to give a tax rebate to people with private health insurance. That's right. Our private health insurance companies are being subsidized by the Australian taxpayer, and still are. Good, huh? Great work if you can get it. The private companies offer all sorts of weird stuff now. It's been a while since I looked. Free this and that. I'm sure they're covered by small print. Myself, I'm 100% USPHC. I had 2 stents put in 2 arteries around my heart a year ago, 2 overnight stays in hospital. I scored a private room the second time as it was available, and all I had to pay for were the taxis to and from the hospital. Of course, the Liberal Party are currently doing their best to fuck all that up. The bastards. And of course, the right wing in Great Britain is going after the service there, and I'm sure that although they've been rather snipped and clipped a little bit, one would hope the right wing in Canada is quite certain that the Canadian system is sooner or later going to bring on bomb throwing Trotskyite communism. But, you know, the point is, it can be done. It can happen. Unless never ever. Hey, let me jump in here. And sorry, the microphone's doing the funny thing again. Roger's been in the room since the very beginning. Good evening, Roger, and thank you for getting us started this evening. You are thus far all alone.
Well, is that right? I'm surprised. My whole point in starting the evening was to get the evening started.
Well, you did. It just didn't go very far.
I see. To shift gears sharply to a cant that you were at earlier, Chuck Todd turns my stomach. He is the enemy. And he is odious beyond description. And so I just have to spill my gut about my response to his approach to doing his job. And you might not even want to get me started.
Oh, no, start.
Well, I did not watch the debate yesterday, even though I've heard odd and weird accolades about the way in which it was moderated, and any restraint on the behavior of Todd was most likely exerted by the presence of Rachel Maddow, who is much too smart to not be able, at least in private, to call Todd out on his maneuvers. Not to say that she necessarily would from a political standpoint. But the slimy way in which he pursues what to me is a fairly obvious agenda, never fails to amaze me. And that he takes ostensibly intelligent and sometimes liberal commentators with him into a realm of some kind of acceptance of his way of doing the things he does in the media, it damages my estimation of anybody who can't see through the guy. He is unspeakable to my mind, and the worst of it is that he is so calculating in his attempt to occupy a position of ostensible balance, which obviously we can tear apart. The notion of editorial balance is quite ridiculous. I could, for example, advocate for the gassing of all people, and then we'd need to get, or I could advocate against the gassing of all people, and we'd need to bring somebody on who would advocate for the gassing of all people. That would be balance, right? So I could go on there. But it seems that his job is to triangulate a way of approaching things that manages to fool a certain contingent of its view of NBC and MSNBC's viewership into thinking that they're providing a reasoned voice. And nothing could be further from the truth. That man is owned by General Dynamics and Boeing and the Republican National Committee and this, that, and the other thing. And the slime that he oozes just makes me want to barf, and it makes me sad. To get back to the point I was going at, he's all the more pernicious because he's disguised as something acceptable. That to me is the bottom line. I'd rather have a Chris Wallace any day.
Well, Roger, I mean, Joke Toad only becomes a viable choice because of the devaluation of the currency, as it were, that was perpetrated by Disco Dave.
Well, that was disgusting. A moment to live in infamy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, MC Rove.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wobbling towers of globular protoplasm. Mm-hmm. White, even, or pink, as I call myself.
No, I'm definitely pink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're more, from what I've seen of you, you tend towards the ashen, young man.
Oh no, that's just the camera. I'm not ashen at all.
It's just bad camera lighting. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm pale, but I mean I'm not No, I'm not sallow by any.
You have laid claim to being too white.
Well, I mean, I get a sunburn under the refrigerator bulb, Roger.
I've seen lots of pictures of pink Bob.
Okay, good to know. Good to know.
I mean, it was back in 1972 when Nick Drake named his album and the title track after me, Pink.
Mm-hmm. A very cool record, poor kid. In fact, you know.
Oh yeah, I drop a Nick Drake reference and somebody picks it up. That's and you know another great moment for the Horn Family Commune congregation.
Nick Drake, Pink Moon.
The musicologist is talking.
Yes, that Nick Drake.
No, I'm speaking of Larry. Larry's our house musicologist, as far
right.
as I know.
Not really, but anyway, I have that record. Very nice record.
Oh, I love all of his stuff.
He has three records out.
And you can find it, Larry?
Oh, yeah.
I have to look in my albums. They're vinyl.
I have all three of them, and they are beautiful records. Anyhow, my disgust at the Toad knows no end. So you really had me going there. I restrained myself. And you may have noticed that yesterday I contributed $3.13. That was calculated. I was hoping that that would be multiplied by the necessary number to achieve the necessary number, because that's a number you cite, the $3.13. So I took it.
Yeah, right, 32, 32 at 313. No, 64.
Today, and because you round up, right?
Right.
But today I was going for maximizing the offer of the person who was offering to fill in the gap.
Yes, Harold.
So I went with 303. I thought 301 was too obvious, so I at least went with a slightly different odd number. But I wanted to maximize our usurpation of that availability.
Yes, and what you're talking about, Roger, is the Roundup Fund,
yes.
Courtesy of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society.
I was thinking of donating one penny 127 times this evening.
PayPal would have sent the PayPal secret police to find you and garrote you and leave you in the snow, Roger.
Well, I've already ascertained that it will not allow a contribution lower than $1.
No, it won't.
So last week I managed a $1.11 pledge to make the last dime of the evening.
Yes, you did, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I like to keep you cogitating. That's part of my cantankerous.
Well, no, I think, and as much as I complain, I think it's probably good for me. It's kind of like how they say doing crossword puzzles will stave off Alzheimer's and stuff like that. Although I'm at the point where I'm referring to the Munchkins as the Munsters, so I may already be screwed. I don't know.
You know what I do is I eat languages for breakfast. I'm attacking an expansion of three of my solid languages right now. And I think it does stave off Alzheimer's. You just got to keep those neurons snapping.
Oh, you and Flavio would get along famously.
I eat them for breakfast.
Yeah, Flavio's just a little east of you over in Wisconsin. And he's multilingual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going for number 8.
Oh, and by the way, language number 8.
Yep.
And I have we have had a correction. Jim has just sent a note in saying, "No, Bob, you are Pank. You got to pronounce it the right way down. Pank."
Now is that multisyllabic Pank?
Yeah, Pank.
Okay, now how do you? Is there like a umlaut in there between an A and an I, or what's?
No, I think we're going to have to create an entirely new linguistic symbol. It's going to be, it's like that Swedish O with the slash through it, only this is an A with a slash through it. Pank.
Pank.
I mean, you hear that little phone, or maybe it's a phoneme, the little between the A and the N, pank.
You remember I was digging at no.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that was maybe an Alabama thing. You didn't seem to quite notice it as I was wondering if it was.
I had never given it a moment's thought until you brought it up, right. Roger.
Yeah. So I was digging at that one. So now we got Pank.
Blame that one on Jim.
Bad Jim.
Yeah, that's Jim being wicked this evening. Mm-hmm. But there are all kinds of those little lovelies down south. GAS, gays.
What's that mean?
GAS, I'm going to
I'm turning on gas.
I'm going to get some gas down to gas station.
Damn.
And then OIL, which is what lubricates your engine. That's not even really a word. That's just more of a noise. Oh.
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 Yeah, you know, it's funny how the human way of approaching things is often to figure out how to make them sound like you approached it as lazily as possible, and then encode that into the evolution of your language. We see evidence of that with all kinds of different morpheme shifts all over the world. And that's the evolution of language. And it's often imprinted with a drive towards carelessness and laziness. It's also kind of fun. People like to talk in a way where they're joking around and being improper. So they make up a way of saying stuff that is fun for them, and it winds up encoding into the whole damn language.
And there are, you know, there are similarities that aren't even similarities. I was listening to, because I'm just this freaking weird, Agnes and I were doing our Mike and Carol Brady impression the other night, and I went off looking on YouTube for Australian Aboriginal songlines.
Cool.
And so we listened to one of those for a while, and then I started getting curious, so I looked up Hopi singing from, you know, the Southwest.
Yep.
And Agnes caught on immediately and said, "You know, that sounds just strikingly similar. I'm sure it has absolutely no similarity whatsoever. But to my ear, it sounds similar. You know, the rhythmic structures, the emphases, and I too love that stuff. I just don't understand enough about it."
Well, there's a author who wrote a very famous work, Bruce Chatwin. Are you familiar with him?
I want to say yes, but you're going to have to help.
Well, you'll need to dig back to about 1991 and look up his book, The Songlines.
Okay, I think I saw his name referenced in one when I was digging around. That's where. Okay.
He writes quite beautifully of the tradition of the singing of dreams and consciousness and the land of the Aboriginal peoples of the island or continent of Australia, among other things. He brought to my mind at that time the traditions of the Hopis regarding their relationship with the land and consciousness and a sense of spiritual connection with existence. So it's interesting that you mention that. And in fact, the name of his book was The Songlines, one of his books.
And in fact, Jennifer in Australia is saying right now, Roger, oh my God, Roger, you're reading my mind as I type. It's a great book.
It is a great book. It's a beautiful book.
And I happen, one of the song lines I happened across was something called The Seven Sisters. And the storytelling in it, as I understood it, as we Mike and Carol Brady'd our way along, I looked at Agnes and I said, "Damned if this doesn't sound a hell of a lot like Gilgamesh and Enkidu, because you had the one, and then you had the wild force, and of course Enkidu is the force of wildness, almost sort of Bacchus-ish or Dionysian." I'm a sucker for Joseph Campbell too. I mean, I love that sort of thing. I love pondering you know, our earliest origin myths and the all too human and frail attempts that we made to understand the world in which we lived. And for me, again, because I'm freaking weird, those people aren't that far off. I mean, in even geologic time, let alone universe time, 40,000 years ago was nothing. And, you know, 10,000 years ago and the incipient rise of agriculture is less than nothing.
Well, you know, the tradition of, okay, this actually causes almost sort of like at least a bottle rocket explosion in my mind, but it's more like it's like a big fancy firework going off in my mind, relating to the connection of a notion of spirituality and reverence for existence as connected to our efforts to describe it or put our minds around it. I still value the expression of Robert Heinlein to grok something.
Yeah, I love that word.
That is a good word, and it's a useful word that I think will have its place in English vocabulary for a very long time. At any rate, I think that our devotion of conscious attention to things which fascinate us is part of the process of those things actually even existing. And the cues that send me in that direction have to do with current revelations in quantum and chaos theory that are showing an interaction between consciousness and physical reality on levels that we can't imagine. So the idea of singing a mountain into existence is something that I think that these guys have been relating to for thousands of years, and they're understanding something about physical reality that we just barely have our pinky dipped into at this point.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Roger, and I've got another little theory that I'm playing with and banging around on that. Part of the reason that you know, once you get past all the guns, germs, and steel stuff,
pay attention to that.
I'm sorry.
We do have to pay attention to that.
Oh, we absolutely do. But part of the reason that Europeans have behaved the way that they do is you know, colonialism, conquest, and everything. Is because of their separation from their theirness. In other words, beginning, oh, I don't know, with the migrations of semi-nomadic peoples back and forth across Europe, and with particular emphasis on the destruction, the very deliberate destruction by Greeks and Romans of Celtic religious systems and Germanic religious systems. Belief systems, maybe, is a better word.
Mm-hmm.
That we got unrooted from who we are.
Yep.
And because we became, for lack of a better term, spiritually rootless, it made it possible for us to become really far more rapacious than we otherwise would have been, and that is a curse that follows us down to the present day. I mean, I saw a post on Facebook the other day about the ongoing effort to save Oak Flats out in Arizona from the tender mercies of the mining company. Of course, John McCain and Jeff Flake are doing everything they possibly can to turn that sacred area, that area sacred to the Apache people, into a giant toxic hole in the ground, and waste in the process one of the last best freshwater reservoirs in that entire state. You know, underground wise.
Yeah,
and it makes me crazy to see that kind of thing. or when that when the sludge dam broke in British Columbia last year, or the sludge dam that broke in Brazil.
Well, I want to just throw this in before it gets too far down the river. Your point about our historical civilization generating a break from our connection to the rest of nature not only allowed us to be much more rapacious, perhaps, than we might otherwise have been. And I think that, I mean, that's absolutely a good point. But it also allowed us, it also laid the ground, and it's sort of a chicken or the egg thing, for a colonization of our consciousness by people who wish to exert mechanisms of social control. So it's like, and I think obviously the church was a very big hunk of this, you know. There have been the use of stories as means of social control is pretty damn old, but we sure did get divorced from it. And these pasty white people and their little mineral exploitation plans and what they're willing to do to dirty their own good names and their own good word, it's just astonishing. And the situation down in Arizona right now, I mean, that one just makes my blood boil. That's not the only one, but it sure.
Oh, no. Like I mentioned a little bit ago, or a few nights ago, the bulldoze the mounds bill, or the grave robber bill up in Wisconsin, because all of those ancient indigenous earthworks were getting in the way of the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual farmers who just needed to plow them down to flat.
You know, did you have a look at that material that I found about the genetic relationship?
Yeah, I did. I've read all of that.
Isn't that shit interesting?
Oh, it's fascinating. I love that speculative stuff. I don't know how much scrutiny it will withstand.
Oh, I think that one of those things was out of a scientific journal. It wasn't really speculative at all. I'm not looking at it right now, but the way that people float around, it does appear that the Mandan story is a little bit doubtful as far as some. That being a direct Welsh implant.
Yeah, but, because there was an urge on the part of the colonialists early on to lay some, because they came from a system, you know, the where especially the English, the legal landed title system. And I don't mean like Earl or Duke, but I mean, you know, titles to estates in land. Where you lay it out, you know, this guy owned it, then this guy owned it, then, and so they were predisposed to try to find some white guy in North America so they could, well, see, we were already here, damn it.
That's right.
And so that's why you wind up with, the late 18th and early 19th century, you can't swing a dead cat in the eastern United States without finding some pseudoscientist claiming that this people or that people were the lost tribes of Israel, and it finally finds its peak in Joseph Smith, because he managed to found a religion that still to this day declares as a matter of faith, as a matter of dogma, that the indigenous peoples who have lived here for 15,000 years are just misunderstood Israelites.
But the presence of Finnic DNA in Kennewick man is pretty much science.
It looks like it. It certainly reads like it.
Yep. So there's lots of. I'm looking for the right word. There's lots of festoonery around people making up a pile of bullshit to serve their own purposes. But there are some funny intertwistings and intertwinings that also appear to be real.
Well, and I'm not sure when he'll hear this, but if Dr. John hears this edition of Friday on the Front Porch, I heartily encourage him to chime in and share his thoughts vis-a-vis that sort of thing. Kennewick Man and you know the buried stuff with the Swedish or Finnish or whatever that supposedly was found and some of that, especially with the Vikings, it's at least positable because of the presence of the waterways that lead all the way from the Atlantic coast more or less to present day Minnesota.
Bob, why wouldn't the traditions of the semi-nomadic or nomadic peoples of Northern Asia, as they then come over to North America and populate regions here, why wouldn't those traditions accompany them? And, did somebody put up a wall between Scandinavia and Finland and Northern Urals to keep those people away from the culture of the Trans-Siberians and the people who wound up coming over here? I don't think so.
I know. It's fascinating, isn't it?
It is interesting.
But we also run the risk of losing everybody else.
Yeah, I think I'm going to politely mute again.
Well, thanks for a great conversation, Roger. It is 14 minutes before the hour, and yes, we have 3:21 to go fundraising for this evening to end the week okay, in the black, to the good, whatever you want to call it. That's 10 at 32, 32 at 10, and it's been a very long day, and I'm very tired and running a little bit slow, so I'm probably not good for much more ciphering than that. Ah. Aha. Thank you, Charlie. Nice round number, too, so that'll take us down to 301 to go. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks so very much for jumping alongside Roger there. And remember, if you want to send odd numbers, cents to go with the dollars, we do have the secret open carry. I gotta get this memorized. Yeah, there it is. The secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Such true. Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, which will happily round up every odd number of cents you send along to an actual even dollar amount. Hence why Roger sent 303 and that got 97 cents attached to it to turn it into four. See how that works? Yeah.
How do you round up 3 cents to four?
No, not 3 cents to $4. $3.03 rounds up to $4 because there's a fund there for rounding up all the odd senses.
Oh, I was thinking of income taxes. If it's over 50 cents, you can round up.
No, we're not bound by IRS rules here. But yeah, that's how it works.
Okay.
So before we bow out for this evening, I had a suggestion from Jim, and I think it's a good one. Let's find out real quickie, like any big Super Bowl plans?
Billable Rick here. Not really, Bob.
I just put it on the big screen in the other room and watch it.
I don't think it's going to be a close game, unfortunately. I think Carolina's going to clean clock with regard to Denver.
Wow. Those are the dangerous games, though. I remember when that was supposed to happen to the Rams.
Well, since you got on the issue of sports, Did anybody see Obama welcoming the Warriors to the White House?
No, I didn't catch that.
No.
Well, you can see it on the White House website. But he got on Steph Curry's case with the game the night before against the Wizards. That he scored so many points, he started clowning around. Like, I mean, he was cracking, Obama was cracking jokes, and those guys were laughing their asses off. So when they gave him, you know, the ceremonial jersey, they said, well, we heard you're going to be a free agent next year. Maybe you want to come give us a tryout.
Nice.
That's good.
Steve Kerr gave him the jersey, and then Steph Curry had told him, you're probably the first president to ever use the term clowning around. I guess Steph Curry and Obama are golf buddies.
Are they?
Hmm.
Yeah. There's some charities he's involved with.
Huh.
He got to play golf with the president. Obama kicked his ass, I guess, in golf.
Well, really? I'll probably slip out of here and go over somewhere and watch the game. There will probably be wings involved.
And the other sports news, it looks like Johnny Football is toast.
Well, is he? That's the thing. Is he?
Well, just from what's come out, there's been a restraining order.
Oh, geez.
The ex-girlfriend filed this restraining order. It's good for 2 years.
Oh, God. I don't think anybody's going to want to touch him because, I mean,
no.
It's all fucked up.
Look at Ray Rice. He never come back playing football.
No, he's like a pariah.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. When somebody with lots of money and guns tells his now ex-girlfriend, shut up or I'll kill us both. After forcing her into a car, hitting her, and dragging her by the hair.
Was that Ray Rice?
No, this is Johnny Football. And see, Football's problems stem to Johnny Football's privilege problem.
Yeah, right.
I remember saying he was going to be nothing but trouble in the NFL when that one moment surfaced when he was still at Texas A&M, when he came to the sideline screaming at the head coach.
Hmm. You know, Bob, I wonder if he caught a case of the affluenza.
He looks like he's got a terror. It very well may be an occupationally terminal case.
Yeah.
Sources say while in his hotel room, the two of them argued over another girl. Crowley told police she tried to leave the room, but that Manziel wouldn't let her. Crowley told police Manziel restrained in some manner and led her down a back stairway to the valet area. I was crying and begged the valet, please don't let him take me. I'm scared for my life. The valet told her, I don't know what to do, and let Manziel leave with her.
Oh, jeez.
Sources say Manziel then drove her about a half a mile to her car, which was parked near the concrete cowboy bar off Cedar Springs Road. She claims she jumped out of the car and tried to hide from Manziel, but he found her in some nearby bushes. He grabbed me by my hair and threw me back into the car and got back in himself. He hit me with his open hand on my left ear for jumping out of the car. I realized immediately that I could not hear out of that ear, and I still cannot today, 2 days later.
Jeez.
And, of course, this is just a repeat of what he apparently allegedly did back in October.
Well, you know, he deserves whatever he gets. I mean, I have no sympathy for that guy, or for Ray Rice, for that matter.
But it's the larger question, Rick. Of what? I mean, did you see the Kenny Stabler story earlier this week?
He had CTE, right? Didn't he?
Yeah, he donated his brain to science when he died.
Yeah.
And they have completed their study on it, and they say his brain was just riddled with CTE lesions.
Jeez.
And there are questions emerging here about, you know, what do we do with this beloved game that is so rife with problems. It just seems, and I love it too, okay? I do. But, you know, there was a time when Theodore Roosevelt was ready to ask the Congress to make the damn game illegal because all the rich, so many rich young white boys were dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the sport could be on life support if parents don't let their kids play. I'm trying to remember, there was a Hall of Famer who Mike Ditka won't let his grandkids play, for example, football, you know?
But the thing is, Devin says ban helmets. That was not a lot of help in the Roosevelt era.
Mm-mm.
But I would be interested to know if there have been any similar studies in, say, maybe the soccer world, but in particular in the rugby world, or maybe Australian rules football, because there's some tough stuff going on in any of the, but in the United States at least, and I think it probably applies globally. These violent sports are seen as a way out of otherwise often hopeless poverty situations. And professional athletics, particularly football, because, you know, a football team's larger than a basketball team, they feed off of a system that begins, you know, in peewee football, that hopes to bring along especially talented young men of color. Because again, it's a way up. It's a way out. And because I'm such a history nerd, I can't help but think of, you know, in ancient Rome, you know, we've promulgated this idea that, you know, gladiatorial fights always ended with, you know, the thumb up or the thumb down, whatever, and you know, dead gladiator. Well, it didn't. Because those guys cost tons of money to train and to pay in some instances. And they had huge fan followings for the day. And to a certain extent, I mean, how many times has the modern gladiator metaphor been used for professional football? But it costs people their lives. You know, from a political standpoint, as Devin just suggests, how about guaranteed universal unconditional minimum income? Yeah, that'd be welfare. The era of big government is over. Right? But, like the rest of America, I'll be sitting there watching. And I'll be waiting to see if the New York Times, that same guy from a couple of weeks ago, writes about how Cam Newton gyrates his pelvis or whatever the hell it was. God, that was embarrassing even to read.
My guess, Bob, is that guy, if he writes another story about Cam, is going to use the word uppity in it.
He used everything but uppity the last time.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. It's time for me to roll out of here. And, of course,
Bob?
Yeah.
No midnight now, or an hour earlier.
Oh, you're going to, okay, so you're going to get going at, what, 11?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right, because of the change in, yeah. Is Malloy back live yet?
No, Monday.
Monday, that's what I thought. So the group will pick up at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Pacific, if you want to jump in when it gets really rocking and really, really fun. Thanks, everybody, for joining in all this week. Thanks to everybody who participated in tonight's Front Porch. Thanks, as always, to Sparky. Thanks to Roger and Larry and Charlie and Rick. And Dustin was there for a few minutes, but I don't know, couldn't seem to keep the connection. But thanks, one and all, for the time that you spend in this little ongoing night-by-night conversation. Thanks to everybody who keeps everything going here. It is the only way everything keeps going here.
and the fact that you find this worthwhile is deeply inspiring. Barring dramatic change come between now and Monday, we will start with a fundraising goal on Monday of about $500. So there we go. But everybody have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl to the extent that it can be enjoyed. Well, we'll talk soon. Thanks always go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, to our news ninjas, to John Fox, Ben Birch, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, and yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.